Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of the NB Update. I'm your host, David Gordon-Koch, reporting from Moncton. This program is brought to you by the NB Media Co-op, in partnership with our friends at CHCO Television. At the NB Media Co-op, our stories take a social justice lens. If you like what we do, please support us by donating and becoming a member of the co-op by going to our online publication at nbmediacoop.org and clicking on Join the Co-op /donate. Today on the show, Goose Lane Editions, a New Brunswick-based publisher, is releasing a new expanded version of its Passamaquoddy-Willistiqua dictionary. The language is spoken in Indigenous communities in New Brunswick and Maine, but it's critically endangered. The NB Media Co-op's intern, Annalia Simon, spoke to one of the co-authors of the dictionary, University of New Brunswick Professor Emeritus Robert M. Levitt. But first, the provincial government's newly released mining industry strategy contains multiple references to environmental stewardship. However, the Conservation Council of New Brunswick says that environmental and community groups were sidelined by Minister of Natural Resources John Herron during consultations. I spoke to Conservation Council Executive Director Beverly Gingras for her take on the plan. Stay tuned. Thanks for joining the NB Media Co-op today, Beverly.
Thank you for the invitation to be here.
The Department of Natural Resources has just released its strategy for mining and the mining industry in New Brunswick. What's your biggest takeaway from this document, Beverly?
Well, the document is clearly designed to try and entice foreign investors into the province to work on improving mining processes here and making sure that there's more development of the mining resources that are in the provinces. Mm-hmm. But I think the document forgets the biggest investor that the government needs to think about, and that's the average New Brunswicker. It speaks about jobs, but it doesn't speak to all the things that New Brunswickers are concerned about when they're thinking about mining. We don't have to look too far to see mines that, the people have come in, the mining owners have come in, they've done some mining, and then when the markets drop, they leave. And they leave behind a legacy of environmental contamination, environmental remediation that needs to get done, and unhealthy people, unhealthy communities. And they leave the taxpayers, having to pick up the tab for the problems that they created. And so I think from my perspective, there's huge concerns about the mining industry and the boom bust cycle and the environmental impacts that they can create, and the corresponding health impacts that happen because of those environmental impacts, and then the effects on the economy of these local communities in the long term, after the companies have left. So there's the Caribou mine, which, the company left, and now the government is holding the liability on the environmental damages that occurred and have to be cleaned up, and also having to ensure that the mining waste or the mining effluent is being treated. So we were talking millions of dollars that the government, and when I say the government, I mean the people of New Brunswick, because it's coming out of all of our pockets, right? So the people of New Brunswick have to pay for.
Well, on the note of the cleanup after a mine has been, exhausted, one thing that stuck out for me in this document was this priority. It's listed, it has to do with funding for reclamation liabilities associated with mining. And first of all, I was wondering if you could explain for people who aren't familiar, what is this? What are reclamation liabilities and what does that mean?
Yeah, so when mines are in operation, they often create a lot of waste, and it could be waste, waste rock, waste materials or chemicals from the process that they do to process the mine and extract the minerals that they want. And that accumulates, and then the government or the industry has to figure out how to deal with all of that in a way that hopefully is not going to impact the environment and human health. And sometimes companies will leave They'll just, they'll go under, they'll pack up and leave. And the responsibility for making sure that that waste is treated properly, and that the environment is cleaned up, that will be transferred on to the public. So public dollars, because there's no one in the companies left to pick up that cost. And the Auditor General in New Brunswick, not that long ago, did a review of those liabilities, and they have said that the New Brunswick government has millions of dollars in environmental liability already from legacy mines. So yeah, in the document they talk about in the mining strategy, it talks about reviewing whether looking at how much companies are required to kind of place aside to ensure that when they leave or something happens, that that environmental liability will be covered. So they're saying they're going to review that, but they don't actually say, what they're going to do after that review. It doesn't say, well, we're going to review it, and if we find there's insufficient funds to, make sure that, if something happens, there'll be enough money for a cleanup. They don't say they're going to increase it. They just say they're going to review it. There's no commitment to actually doing anything after that review. It's very interesting wording. When I read that, I was like, okay, you're going to review it, and then what are you going to do?
One of the major areas of focus of the government with respect to the mine industry has been the Sisson mine. Just could you talk about the Sisson mine and what are your thoughts about the situation as it stands now, and what are your major concerns about the Sisson mine?
Yeah, so I mean, the Sisson mine is a prime example of something that is proposed that could have extreme, huge risks for the environment, for people's health, and for the local economies, if it does indeed happen. There are huge risks in terms of potential effluent spills. The proponent is proposing one, I think, the biggest effluent retaining dam that's ever been built in Canada. It's going to be, bigger than I think than most of the north side of Fredericton. So like a huge scale that has never been seen here in New Brunswick. And it's a huge risk that something could happen. And if God forbid there's a spill in the water, even it means contamination of not just the Nashwauk River, which is downstream of the Sisson mine, but also of the St. John, the Wollastic River. And that river is, important to so many communities downstream, and their health and their well-being and their economies. Like if that gets damaged, it's just such a huge risk. And I think it's an example of where we're thinking the profits are worth those risks, but when you actually examine the economics of the mine, you realize that we're, New Brunswickers are not going to be getting that much money from that mine if it does go through. I mean, they're talking about millions of dollars of royalties a year, but I think it averages out to like maybe $20 million of royalties for the province. But they're going to have to spend that much just making sure the roads are, well enough that the mine can have people coming and going. They're going to have money for infrastructure. They're going to have money for housing people. So, the economics of that mine aren't there either. So there, it's one of those things where we're very concerned about jobs, and I'm not anti-job, no one is, but New Brunswickers want jobs that, that they want a good paying job, but they want jobs that, aren't going to damage their health, that aren't going to damage the health of their environment and their communities, that, isn't going to have a negative impact in the well-being of their communities in the long term. And the SysInMine is an example of a project that could potentially do that if it goes through.
Now, I wanted to talk about the lead up to this this document, and noting that the upholding environmental stewardship is a theme in the text. It's referenced a few times, but notably the Conservation Council and other environmental and community groups were sidelined in the lead up in the consultations. Can you talk about what happened?
Yeah, I mean, we, the environmental groups, had been hearing about this strategy for a while, and I think we had an expectation that the government would do some consultation, as they do with other strategies and policies. And we weren't approached, so we proactively asked the minister for a meeting prior to the release of the strategy, and we never got, we heard from the minister. He was open to having that discussion, which was good, but there was no movement into actually making that discussion happen. The minister has said he would like to have that discussion anytime, and I think, we're going to be looking for an opportunity in the near future to have that discussion and voice our concerns and our thoughts about that, the strategy, with him in person soon.
Well, all of this is happening in the context of larger efforts to speed up, to accelerate natural resource development in Canada in the context of this trade war. And for example, in November, Prime Minister Mark Carney referred the Sisson project to the Major Projects Office, which is mandated to speed up so-called nation-building projects. And in December, New Brunswick signed a deal with the federal government meant to speed up the development of major projects more generally, but critics have said, we did an article quoting you at the time, that this approach threatens to water down environmental assessments, and also First Nations groups have said that they're being sidelined in this process. So, just could you speak to the this I don't know, apparent urgency at these high levels of government to push through these natural resource projects and elaborate on your concerns a bit.
Yeah, I think the trade wars have done multiple things, some good and some bad, but there definitely is this feeling of urgency in terms of trying to diversify Canada's economy. And I think we all understand the need to do that. But like I said, speeding things along, it can be dangerous. It can create cracks in the system. It can weaken the system, weaken the processes that are supposed to be in place to protect the public. And I think that sometimes companies and governments are using this urgency to maybe loosen environmental public health regulations that they felt were, holding them back from using or taking advantage of the environment in some ways, which is, concerning. But and I think we see that in the government talking about reducing regulatory burden and trying to look at all the regulations. And what I'm hoping for, if the government is serious about environmental stewardship and environmental protection, that they'll strengthen environmental rules. They'll strengthen the Clean Air Act. They'll strengthen the Clean Water Act. They'll strengthen all these environmental rules meant to keep us safe. And by doing so, then the public will feel like, okay, these industries are coming in, but we've got these regulations that are holding them in line and holding them to account. I'm hoping that the government doesn't use this as an opportunity to weaken things, but they actually, understand the value of strengthening the rules. And I think just thinking about the budget that's coming up, if the government again is serious about environmental stewardship, then I hope to see that reflected in the upcoming provincial government, budget. Because if we see them reducing budgets to natural resources and in the environment, and reducing funding for environmental groups that are doing monitoring, that are engaging on environmental issues, then to me, that's a reflection that they're not committed to environmental stewardship. So I guess, I think the next few weeks are going to be a telltale sign of how serious the government is about environmental protection in the province.
Well, we'll definitely be watching. I've been speaking with Beverly Gingras, Executive Director of the Conservation Council of New Brunswick. Thanks for speaking with the NB Media Co-op today.
Yes, thank you for your time and interest.
The NB Media Co-op requested an interview with Minister of Natural Resources John Herring, but he was not available.
Hello, I'm Annalia Simon reporting from Fredericton for ND Media Co-op. Today I'm on the line with Robert M. Levitt, Professor Emeritus of the University of New Brunswick, where he was the longtime director of the Mi'kmaq Wolastoqe Center. He's also the co-author of the Passamaquoddy and Wolastoqe Dictionary that's just been published in its second edition by the University of Maine Press in association with Goose Lane Editions. Thank you for joining us today, Professor Levitt.
Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you.
So when did you start working on this project?
We started in the 1970s, about 50 years ago. I was working with a bilingual education program in Maine, Passamaquoddy, Beskidmukati, and English. And the director of the program wanted to have a dictionary of the language started, and there was a linguistics doctoral student from MIT working at the time, Phil LeSword, and he really started the collecting words and designing a format for dictionary entries. And when he left, David Francis and I took over the project around 1975, I guess 50 years ago. And Margaret Apt joined us in the 90s. And then the first edition was published in 2008. And now the second edition has just come out. And then there's the online dictionary, which is housed at the University of New Brunswick in Fredericton. And that's been online since the 1990s, and is maintained by the university libraries.
As you gather resources for the second edition, were those resources also added to the online dictionary?
Yes, in fact, the online dictionary is really the master copy of the dictionary, and all the text from the online dictionary was downloaded to create the book version of the dictionary. And we've even continued adding words and editing entries, adding more example sentences, for instance, since the book was produced. So that's an ongoing project. It's one of those never-ending projects because there's always another word that you find that isn't in the dictionary. As I started working with the Bachelor of Education program that's why I was hired at UNB. We had a Bachelor of Education program for First Nations students, and the students were both Maliseet, Wolastoqe, and Mi'kmaq, and a lot of them were interested in language revitalization efforts. And I started working with a group of Wolastoqe language teachers and a group of Mi'kmaq language teachers. I really got myself pretty immersed in Left away, particularly because I was already familiar with Eskimo-Kati, which, and they're the same language. Eskimo-Kati and Wolastoqiyik, that's why the dictionary is, has both words in the title.
Can you talk about the process of making this dictionary and what does it involve?
It's interesting. We took several tacks on it. One was David Francis, who's the principal author. He got fascinated by the language and by reading and writing it. I was teaching a course way back in the 70s at Pleasant Point, where he lived, Zibaik, on just a course about reading and writing the language using the writing system that had been developed for the bilingual program. And one night I brought in a very old transcription of a Beskidmukati legend, and we were reading it, and the idea was to rewrite it using the modern spelling. And all of a sudden he looked up and said, "My grandmother told me this story." And he was born in 1917, so his grandmother, grew up in the 1800s and knew all these legends orally. And he became so fascinated with the fact that someone had written this down, way back in the 1880s, and that he really dedicated himself to studying the language, learning about the grammar of the language, teaching the language. And he did a lot of the compilation of words in the dictionary. He was really good at, thinking about synonyms and different ways of saying the same thing. So what he did a lot was we had a database set up, and he would enter words in the database, and then they would remind him of other words. And so that was one thing we did, was just take words that, went with certain categories, or words that were associated with other words, and just, entered them in the database word by word. The other thing that Margaret App did was to go out into the community with a tape recorder and interview people about their experiences or about their specific knowledge they had about fish species or basket making or whatever, the person was interested in, and then transcribe those interviews and a lot of vocabulary and words for the dictionary and example sentences that are found in most of the entries come from those interviews. And then a lot of the, then there were a lot of old texts that we looked at too, where people, particularly scholars, I guess to use a general term, starting in the late 1800s and into the early 1900s, had transcribed oral tradition. So there were a lot of old words in those texts that, sometimes people didn't use anymore. But it was good because David Francis, as I said, he was born, more than 100 years ago. And he grew up a lot with his grandparents, and their language went way back into the 1800s. So he knew a lot of those old words. He had heard them as a child. And so they made it into the dictionary. And then, starting in about 2006, I think, might have around that time, A videographer, Ben Levine, got a grant to make some videos of Besk Oduhmukati people, and there were a few he did with Wolastoqiyik speakers, just conversing with each other, sometimes just sitting around and having a conversation, and sometimes doing something while they were talking, playing cards or trapping muskrat or things like that. So those videos are available on the online dictionary portal, and a lot of vocabulary words came out of those videos.
I've been speaking with Robert M. Levitt. Thank you for joining the NB Media Co-op today.
Oh, you're very welcome, and all the best to you.
And thanks to our intern, Analia Simon, for that interview. And check out our online publication, nbmediacoop.org, for more reporting from Analia. And remember, if you like what we do, please support us. Go to nbmediacoop.org and click on join.com/donate. That's all for our show today. Thank you for tuning in to the NB Update. For the NB Media Co-op, I'm David Gordon-Kosh. Thank you.